This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, daily YouTube videos, and I'm a longtime podcaster. Also, I have metastatic stage 4 prostate cancer that came out of remission in January. During the 2020 pandemic, my doctors advised me to stay at home, and the Life of Fitz podcast was born. 4 years later, I'm back in my cancer fight and continuing this podcast, calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I have met throughout my 35 years in this industry. And now I'm adding in some new friends to my call list. And of course, I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. This is one of those Life of Fitz episodes that makes me feel, well, old. Because in 1998, we started our company, publishing PowerCat Illustrated. And in 2000, we realized we needed a physical office. And we also needed to start doing some advertising with maybe billboards. Well, we put that together, and our office became our billboard in the heart of Aggieville. And not long after moving to Aggieville, a certain establishment called So Long Saloon moved in across the street. Great burgers, great service, great people. And I spent almost every lunch in there because it was my neighborhood. And after I'm done working on the magazine, I'd go grab a beer. In the process, I met a lot of great people. And one of them was a track athlete named Adam Walker. Fast forward more than 20 years into the future, and Adam Walker has worked his way up through academic and athletic administration, earned his PhD, and now has returned to Kansas State University, his alma mater, to be the new president and CEO of the Kansas State University Alumni Association, replacing the legendary Amy Button Renz, someone I need to get on this podcast. But I tell you what, that made me feel old. Adam Walker is back. And he's the boss of the Alumni Association. So, it seems like a good time to call Dr. Adam Walker right here in Manhattan, Kansas.
Well, hello, old friend.
Hello, Dr. Walker.
How you doing?
I'm good. I've got some foot pain, Doc. What should I do about that?
You know, I'm the non-helping kind, so you called the wrong doctor.
Well, first let me say welcome back home, man. This is awesome.
Thank you. It's surreal. It's great to be back.
Yeah.
So, good talking to you.
Yeah, you haven't even been on duty in a week, and I already called you up.
I know.
You've been busy, man. Give us a recap of your first week as the boss of the Alumni Association.
Yeah. So, like Fitz of 20 years ago, I spent every night in Aggieville that I've been here.
Yep.
And I'll preference that with we're staying at the Courtyard by Marriott, so not like the old days, but It's been great. So, you know, I'm day seven in, and the first, you know, Monday through Friday, had 2 days in the office and three in Colorado. So it wasn't too bad. We had some visits out there, and President Linton was out there with several other university officials, and we saw a lot of alums and supporters. I had some great meetings, and then we ended the week with the Wabash Cannonball in Colorado. And nice. Raised the most amount of scholarship dollars so far for that event in Colorado. So that was tremendous. A little over 200,000, which is just awesome.
Did you go up to Boulder and say, come on, guys, it's time. Let's go.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I said, well, we're kind of the welcoming party, you know, because actually I got out there on Wednesday and saw the president. And I said, well, I hear there's some news. He goes, yeah, we're voting here in about an hour. So, yeah, I think everybody out there, you know, a lot of alums in Colorado, they're excited because now they get to see K-State more often out there, which will be good. So,
yeah, that's, I mean, it's good for the conference, but I think it's huge for K-State with particularly our Western Kansas fans that, you know, can have access to games in another direction. So it's really cool. I'm really fired up. I never thought I'd be excited about having Colorado back. I'll be honest, but I am.
Yeah. Me too. I think it'll be great. And like you said, it'll be nice, another option. And I wouldn't be surprised in 2024 if they open up with K-State and Colorado, just because you think about it, the old Big Eight were the closest geographically.
Yep.
You know, if Nebraska was still in the conference, it'd be Nebraska. But I think it may be us. We'll see. It'll be fun.
Yeah, so. I agree. That will be cool. Okay, so let's start with this, I guess. What led to this decision to get out of athletics? You were climbing. You were on track to be an AD, and then you took a left turn into alumni. What went into that decision?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because I thought the same thing. I've got a really different background in higher education. So I've been on both sides, academics, athletics. I've worked in the foundation. I've been in enrollment management. I've taught. Over the last nearly 15 years, been in athletics primarily, and, you know, really thought that was probably the next thing is to be an athletic director. I was working with Laird Veach at Memphis now for, he's been there nearly 4 years, believe it or not. Oh, but that was the thought. And this came up, and, you know, I wouldn't have an interest in alumni association if it wasn't for K-State. Right. And that's kind of what they asked me. So, you know, why alumni association? I said, well, I wouldn't do anywhere else but K-State. But the more and more I went through the process, it just became apparent that this was the perfect fit. And especially with meeting President Linton, that was the cherry on top. He's just so reinvigorated the campus and alumni. But it's really because I get to use a unique set of skills. So the great thing about the Alumni Association, we're going to make sure we're messaging this out, is that we are the hub, the central spoke, if you will, for the campus, for the university. So we connect athletics, we connect the foundation, we connect campus with the president's vision. So it's really a unique role where I get to work with future K-Staters, current students, young alumni, a legacy. So it's really a unique role, and I'm really excited to be in it and just help K-State.
That's really cool. And it's an energized time here. And President Linton, of course, is part of that. You know, he kind of comes in with maybe a better understanding and vision of what Kansas State needs and what it is than maybe, you know, prior presidents, which isn't a shot at them. It's just he's got kind of the perfect background for this. And also athletics is energized quite a bit with some pretty good coach hiring by Gene Taylor. It's got to be fun coming back in the midst of all that.
No, it really is. I mean, you know, being a former student athlete and obviously working in athletics, you know, look forward to working with Gene and their coaches, but it really is. I mean, you think about, you know, Big 12 champions and Sugar Bowl and Elite Eight, and just women's program is going to be, women's basketball is going to be phenomenal. You know, the new volleyball center. I mean, there's just so much to be excited about. And that's really a perfect time. You think about with President Linton and his new next gen strategic plan, we're going to be a part of that. 2024 is actually Alumni Association's 150th anniversary. So I've not got it down yet, but I've got to learn the centennial.
Yeah, I'll let you say
so that. I've got to work on that a little bit. So I got a little bit of work on that, but I'll get that down by January. But it's a perfect time to come in and have a vision and a plan with one K-State. So, and that includes athletics. So, yeah. Exciting times.
We should probably pause and mention that I haven't had her on yet, but Amy Button-Renz will at some point be on this podcast. What a person to follow in that job. She's an absolute she's a cornerstone of the university. Mm-hmm. She's been at it so long and a wonderful human being. Those are big shoes to fill.
Yeah, you know, I got several degrees, but I kind of question my intelligence, you know, following someone like her, because she is tremendous. I mean, over 45 years at the Alumni Association, I mean, you can pretty much, you know, build the building, you know, help get that, her vision. I mean, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. And I've known her since I was a student, worked with her, you know, in the Catbacker events and Alumni Association events when I was in the admissions office. So I just think the world of Amy, and she's just been tremendous and a big asset. And you're right, some big shoes to follow. But the great thing is we have a great foundation built. So it's going to be exciting to carry that on and build on that legacy for sure. Yeah. And she's a great asset even now. So
not bad digs there.
No,
right next to campus is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I got a great view from the office. That's for sure.
Well, I'll come up and hang out in it, and I'll bring some beer, and I'll just sit there and look at the view.
I love it. Be okay.
I mean, no deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back to the very beginning. Did we meet in So Long Saloon?
I think we probably did. Yeah, this would have been, oh gosh, who knows how many years ago? What, nearly 20, probably?
Yeah,
close to.
I mean,
yeah.
They opened in 2001. It may not have been long after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think go
ahead.
I think I met your wonderful wife Rebecca, separate to you, also in So Long Saloon.
I think so. Yeah, and it was easy enough to find you there. If you weren't in the offices across the street, you're probably good chance you were So Long. So
yeah, those are the days of the website and magazine and constant work. And then at the end of the night, I would go get drunk. Wasn't the most healthy lifestyle, let's put it that way. but I met an incredible number of people, including you. Nothing makes you feel older to have a former student at K-State who you befriended along the way become the Alumni Association president. But it's really cool for me. It's really cool.
Yeah. No, it really is kind of neat to come back. And there's so many relationships. You know, it's almost like we haven't left. We've been gone almost 15 years. But, you know, in some senses, it's like, you know, picking up the phone call with you and just picking it right back up. Right. So I think that's neat, and that helps with the transition for sure. So,
well, how is the beautiful wife and the two little clones you have?
They are great. So for those that don't know, Rebecca and I met each other in Anderson Hall, working in the admissions office.
Wow.
And met there when I was an admissions rep, and she was a student worker. So there's that there interesting story. And then we got married in the Alumni Center. So it's kind of neat. I get to go to work every day where we got married.
That's really cool.
Yeah, isn't that neat? And Dr. Bosco was in our wedding, and Amy was very kind. At the time, they weren't allowing, you know, weddings during the weekends of football games, but she made an exception, and we had a Friday night wedding, of course, and then the game was Saturday, so it was perfect for everybody to come in town and enjoy the wedding and a party and then go to the football game the next day. So kind of neat story.
Okay, how old are the kids?
Yes. So Addison is 12, who'll be 13 in November. Of course, she's like 20, you know, going on 20. And then with Landry is one. And I tell people one of them was a surprise. And most may think the one-year-old, but it's the 12-year-old. So Addison, just we moved to Orlando and found out shortly after we were married that we were expecting. And Addison's been a blessing. And then we've been wanting to have another kid, and had some miscarriages and some troubles along the way. So we did IVF and that worked out, and Landry's just been tremendous. So, helped add onto the family. So I got two, I'm outnumbered. I've got, two girls, Rebecca, and then, our dog's even female. So I'm outnumbered for sure.
Dude, what's going on here? We just got off vacation, and we did a nice little evening boat tour to look at some dolphins off of Hilton Head. And, this poor guy comes in, with his wife and four daughters. And I'm like, how are you not drunk all the time? And he goes, I should be, but I kind of know how to handle it at this point. I go, it's a lot. And
Yeah.
But it's very cool, man. It's so awesome to have you guys back. But so what are your goals with the Alumni Association? I mean, what are you trying to you're taking over such a healthy institution, mm-hmm. but surely you have some of your twists of your own vision.
Yeah, and I've been asked that quite a bit. My first answer is, you know, first I want to get here, experience it for 6 months, learning and listening to her. So we're going to build that together. But there are some common themes I've already heard throughout my short stint. And really, those are, you know, three common themes. Connect. So, you know, the Alumni Association is here to connect future K-Staters, which means helping with recruitment and enrollment management. So we need to get more students to K-State. As we know, if students aren't here, K-State doesn't exist. So we're going to play a role in that. Current students. So we want to make sure that current students know us in the Alumni Association. We're connecting with them all the way from orientation to the graduation, right? And of course, homecoming's a part of that. And then young alums. We want to connect with young alums, help them in their transition to the career. We've got some great volunteers and in our association and in our connection is that, for instance, there's a great alum in Dallas, and she's got a connection of lawyers and attorneys, 715. And so anytime a new K-State student's coming to the network, and it could be anywhere. Hey, this student's looking for a position, a job. She shoots out an email, 715 K-Staters, and it's an instant network. So we need to build more of that, which is really neat. And then legacy alums, right? So we need to find a way to connect and make sure they feel welcomed. And who knows, maybe that's like you mentioned, having a beer at the Alumni Association. Maybe that's having legacy K-Staters or young K-Staters come back and enjoy a beverage and reconnecting with K-State. So connect is the first one. The second theme is align. So as I mentioned earlier, we're here to support athletics, the foundation, campus, and then, of course, President Linton's vision. So we're here to make it one K-State. And then the last one is simply serve. You know, we're here to serve our students and our community and K-State however best we can to make sure K-State's the best it can be. So I need to find a T in there because I got the C, A, and S. If I can find a T, it's a perfect acronym, you know, and we love acronyms. So yeah, I need to find a T there. So I got to work on that.
Trouble. We're going to make some trouble. you said something there that really clicked with me because we both love Kansas State. We're both alumni of Kansas State. But it's not a big institution, whether you're talking about current enrollment or alumni base, but it is very engaged as an alumni base. And it probably needs even more because as a smaller institution, and I certainly don't mean that as an insult to my alma mater in any way, it's just a reality. As a smaller institution, in this world in which we're competing with bigger institutions, maybe with bigger foundations and all of that, we all got to row together. I mean, we all got to be in this together because put together, I think K-State fans are a mighty force that projects much more size than what is reality. And I think that's a compliment on the alumni base.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a great point. Right now, you know, at a high water mark, we had just over 40,000 Alumni Association members, which is incredible. Number one in terms of percent of grads in the Big 12 and fourth nationally. So that is that's a testament to our passion. But we need to make sure that is strengthened, and we need to continue that because it is important. Because although we're small in numbers, we're mighty. But for instance, I worked at UCF for a year, didn't really care for the culture there, so I was there for a short stint. But now they're in the Big 12. You know, they've had the second largest enrollment in the country. And their average age of their alums is 38, and it's dropping.
It's great.
Because they're graduating so many students. I mean, they're the largest institution in Florida by far. And so those are the type of institutions, Houston and the new, you know, BYU's got a huge alumni base. So we have to make sure that we have to connect, and we've got to be, you know, mighty and nimble. So that's a great point. We need all K-Staters for sure.
Well, you brought up something there. UCF is a different culture. Basically, it was founded, I think, in 63, right? Because I was born in 64.
Yeah.
I heard a stat last year, not this year, but last year at Big 12 Media Days, that 99% of their alumni are still alive, which is just a stunning, stunning stat. And probably also speaks to the caution with which they live. That's going to be a monster school. I mean, we get 20 years down a Big 12 membership. They are going to be an absolute monster, I think, a force within the college realm, not just college athletics.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hate to say it, but I think they really are, because they're young, they're growing. They're going to be a force reckoned with. Their fans are young and rowdy, too. So for those that know other fan bases, they're going to give, I think, Colorado a run for their money. Mm-hmm. I've been to a few games there, obviously, as a Way fan, and they can definitely wreak some havoc on you. So I think what's interesting with these you know, four new schools, you're going to find some unique rivalries that will bud along the way. And I would guess UCF may be one of those, even though we're, you know, so far apart. And that's what's so interesting with this, the new conference alignment. It's no longer geographical anymore. But, you know, some of those rivalries used to be between schools that were the closest to each other. But I think what you're seeing now more, sometimes it just depends on the games and how they end up and the fan bases. And, you know, even TCU, for instance, I mean, that's something just in the last couple of years, it seems like that's starting to be a great competition. So who knows? Yeah.
And that kind of took off with, I mean, it started with Coach Patterson, of course, at K-Stater.
Mm-hmm.
But it strikes me that Gus Malzahn's going to return to Bill Snyder Family Stadium this season after being there with Auburn and him just raving about the crowd and the facility. So I have a feeling the build up to that game, UCF fans will begin to understand that this is really important. And, you know, across American college football, has its corners, but it hasn't been like it is in the Big 12. It's just the reality of the different levels of the institutions. Mm-hmm. But I think they're in for an awakening on road games. Let's put it that way.
Yep. Let's hope so. I think that's a great observation that not many people realize that Malzahn was here with Auburn, you know, a few years ago. And I think if I remember, did we win that game or did Auburn pull that out?
Auburn pulled it
out.
Remember?
Yeah. That's what I thought.
I hate to bring this up, but Tyler Lockett dropped a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Which he never did.
That's not good. But to your point, these fan bases are really excited to be in the Big 12, you know, being the American with Memphis and working athletics, you know, and so they're going to travel, I would suspect, pretty well the first few years. But you're right. It is going to be interesting because they're not used to these crowds and the passion. And so it's going to be fun to see that in person. So it'll be an interesting experience.
Well, what was it like working for Laird? He's a tyrant, isn't he? He just yells at you every day. He's such a good dude.
He really is. You know, what's interesting is I knew Laird a little bit, you know, working here at K-State. It's my time here. But I actually got to know him better after he left. And we connected at Florida. And he was the first call he made during the interview process at Memphis, and he called me and I basically talked to him for a couple of hours. I gave him the cliff notes, and they must have been good cliff notes because he got hired and he's just tremendous. He's what I like about Laird. He's calm. He can boil down a complex problem into simple parts. But he was just tremendous to work with. And I kind of joke with him. The previous athletic director, Tom Bowen, was very animated. And I say, you know, your meetings are so boring compared to Tom's, because you'd come in and literally would not know what to expect. It would, one day he'd be high and just exciting and jovial and taking, you know, talking jokes. And the next thing you never know, the next 2 hours, he may come in and upset and yelling. But Laird's very steady. So that was kind of the joke, is saying your meetings are very boring compared to Tom's. So,
you know, we get to a point in our life where boring's kind of good.
It is. Sometimes it is. Yep. It is sometimes, but I'm excited. I didn't come here to be boring and especially with President Linton. So that's what's exciting is how well, and it's not just speak, how well athletics works with the foundation and fundraising and how well campus and the deans work together and President Linton and just the cabinet and the staff there and us. I mean, it really isn't just speak. It really is, you know, some intentionality behind that, how well we work together. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's a big thing to put on a new president, but I kind of get Weefald vibes. And I remember Weefald when he first arrived, and he was, you know, younger, and he built a team. And that he was great at team building, and everyone was, he got everyone on board. And if you weren't on board, you weren't around anymore. And I get it. The campus seems to be returning to that. Let's get a focus here on recruitment, retention, making sure that the campus is thriving. And, you know, the campus itself and intercollegiate athletics are a great advertisement for the university. The students do a great job of advertising themselves at sporting events and showing how fun it is. I just feel like Kansas State over the next few years might see a renaissance in an era when typically enrollments are shrinking a little bit and people are struggling to keep people on campus.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting observation and parallel, because you think about it, when Weefald came in the mid to late 80s, enrollment was stagnant or declining. Of course, the football program was futile to you and in shambles. That's not the case now, fortunately, but that is interesting that at that time, enrollment was the big key. And I think now there's a big emphasis on enrollment as well. And obviously being, you know, an admissions representative, I guess, nearly 20 years ago now. But that is kind of a point of pride in my eyes, is making sure that we retain the best and brightest students from Kansas and then also track from outside the state, because, you know, high school enrollments here are declining, you know, in Kansas. Yeah. You know, that's just a fact. So we're either going to have a higher yield of those students or we're going to have to go out of state, which, you know, President Lynn's got a great plan to get out, and Colorado's a great example, right? Nearby, a lot of alums, you know, and I think, you know, we even talked about this, is CU being back in the conference. That's a great opportunity for us to be more engaged and hopefully get more students from Colorado and other states, because that's what K-State needs, is, you know, a healthy enrollment, you know, and just like anything else, you know, wins in sports help out with the bottom line. Well, in campus, it's, you know, healthy enrollment helps out with the university.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I want to get into sports here in a little bit, because you've got such a deep knowledge in your dissertation is fascinating. It's so perfect for what's going on right now. But one of the things Brett Yormark's doing that I'm fascinated with, I think it's brilliant, is the Mexico initiative. And really, that's a fancy title, but it's a Spanish language initiative. It's trying to get to fans that are, you know, Spanish first language. And that's I don't want to say a concern. That's a real point of emphasis for institutions like Kansas, where a great deal of our high school base, what we will be recruiting over the few years, are going to be from Spanish speaking households. I'm just, it's incredible what's happened out west, but it's something that you could really take advantage of.
No, that's a great point. You think about, you know, in terms of growing populations, you know, the Hispanic population is simply growing. We know they're going to be eventually the majority is what, you know, is going to be the case of it. You know, I've seen that being from Western Kansas for sure. And we actually even talked about that, is the culture for them is usually to stay close to home. So if we can get them to K-State, great. But, you know, maybe you get them to go to the local community college first and you build a bridge, right? And then once they start to come to K-State, then they can start telling their friends and family, like, you know, I went to K-State, it was great. And so if you can build that pipeline and reputation, if you will, that's what's needed. But, you know, Yormark sees it, and that's why I love him as a commissioner. He's so edgy, you know, and sometimes I guess the presidents may have to rein him in a little bit.
Right.
But it's better that than the commissioner that just, you know, sits on their hands and gets picked apart. So, yeah.
No Which doubt. Has been the more common way of being a commissioner in the past. And I think the Pac-12 has one right now that's getting picked apart. But
yeah,
Brett Yormark's like a shark. He's in constant motion. And you're right. There's probably, for every great idea, there's two where everyone says, no, we're not going to do that. But that's, you know what? He's not tied to any idea that unless he's really like, I'll just bring this up, the UConn initiative. He's fascinated with UConn, and the everyone else is kind of like, we don't see it, you know, but I almost think that's one where you trust his gut because he keeps coming back to it. But that's another point.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Let's get to this. I didn't realize this until I did my 2 minutes of preparation for this call, and that's in depth for me. But yeah. Your doctorate, your dissertation is entitled "Intercollegiate Athletic Success and the Financial Impact on Universities." Dude, you were published in the Wall Street Journal.
I was, and
I'd get a tattoo with that.
Yeah, there you go. You know, what's funny is I always was joking around with people. I said, you know, after I finish my dissertation, I'd love to publish it. And, you know, the USA Today, you know, I don't know if they're still even in print, but I know they're in digital. But they used to have that little blurb in the sports section or and say, hey, you know, so-and-so's research was this. And I said, man, if I could just get a blurb, it would be great. And somehow I got connected with, you know, this writer, Keller. He happens to be a graduate from the other school out east. But he connected and said, you know, this is very interesting. I'd love to write a story. And there, lo and behold, I got a whole story in the Wall Street Journal. So obviously I framed that and was very proud of that as well. So
you should be. So, yeah. Doc, give me your boiled down version of what your paper was about.
Yeah, and that was years ago, over 10. But in essence, basically what I looked at is at the time, you know, we didn't have college football playoff. It was a BCS. But we had Final Four. So what I did is I took the previous 10 years. So looked at all the institutions that had athletic success. And that was defined as making the BCS bowl in football or the Final Four in basketball. So I think those were pretty common standards of this was a successful year. And what I did is I looked back, you know, the previous year at all those institutions, what their fundraising numbers were across the board, not just athletics, and enrollment and applications. And it was significant in terms of when they had that athletic success, and, you know, President Linton spoke to this, how much publicity and media that drives. So it's not just great for the athletic department, and yes, they're going to sell more tickets and have more donations when they're successful, but it's great for the institution. It's great for the exposure, millions and millions of dollars, marketing dollars that you just can't buy. And then applications, enrollment, even selectivity. Schools like TCU years ago, when they made their first big bowl, they have a cap on enrollment, but their selectivity, which means their GPA, their ACTs, the quality of student was increased because they had so many more applications. But also across the board, so not only did athletic donations increase, but donations across campus, agricultural school or arts and sciences or business also increased. So it was interesting. At all institutions, about 12.5% was the average increase in contributions year over year in relation. I won't say correlation, but in relation to athletic success. And at private institutions, it was actually more, nearly 25%. So I thought that was really unique in that, privacy, and maybe that's because the alumni understand philanthropy and support, but it was double at private institutions when they saw athletic success. So that just shows you some of the value athletics has, you know, to the entire campus.
It really does. I mean, you know, it gets back to the front porch philosophy. And that's something I learned from Doc Weifold, and he was the epitome of that. Let's get football going. Mm-hmm. It'll be our front porch. It's the most visible part of university, but it gets people in the front door to see all the incredible rooms of education you have.
Absolutely.
And I love that analogy. And I think it's lacking in the Pac-12. I don't think they quite understand the role of intercollegiate athletics and what it can be for your university. It just seems like so many of their universities treat it as, well, it's something we do. It's just part of being a university. We got to do it.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because actually after I had done my analysis, my committee said, hey, can you break it down further into regions? And I did that. What's very interesting that you mentioned that. So what region do you think had the largest impact from athletic success?
I would guess the South.
Correct. So it was the South, followed by the Midwest, followed by the East, and the least impact was the West. So that just goes to show you, maybe there's just less, I don't know if it's just attention or interest, but that kind of was interesting that by region, South was number one, Midwest two, but the West Coast was last in terms of impact. So there's some
data for you. That is really interesting, but maybe that comes from the scattered population and there's just, I mean, it's, now,
pro sports is bigger out there,
And the Pac-12 is running into this. They don't have as many big institutions in the beyond the Rockies. They're not out there. I mean, it's hard for them to expand and meet their other criteria, which I think are too steep. But their other criteria, you know, when you start crossing off Boise and saying they'll never be in this and UNLV, they'll never be in this. Hell, they cross off the entire Big 12 and said, you're not worthy of us. Pretty soon you get yourself into trouble. And I think there's more. It's weird. It's like a lot of these, I didn't understand the level of it, but a lot of the Pac-12 institutions almost have an Ivy League self-identity that seems misplaced. I don't know if that's right.
It's interesting because I bet you if you could go back, if they knew what they knew today, right, which is always 2020, but you could go back, 10 years or so, would they have taken some Big 12 schools versus, UNLV, Boise State, whatever they may be looking at? I think they'd probably say yes. But at the time, they were, the schools academically wise weren't up to snuff, if you will. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, I kind of admire them for setting their academic standards, but it's gotten their way now, and it might all their institutions might suffer because of it, and that's a shame. But these are cutthroat times right now in major college athletics, and somehow, some way, your alma mater and the Big 12 Conference look like, as of now, it changes, but as of now, it's going to be a survivor, which is an incredible story in itself.
Yeah, it really is. When I was in Memphis, we were going through all that. We were really concerned, like, well, what's going to happen to the Big 12 and K-State? Where are they going to land? And not only have they survived, they've thrived, and looking like they may be, top three conference, possibly, which is great for K-State because, you want to be in a stable conference. And although it's somewhat, scattered geographically, but the neat thing is you still have some of those built-in schools that, the KU, Iowa State, Oklahoma State that you've been playing for years now, Colorado back. So that's kind of neat that you do have some close road trips for sure.
There's going to be a national conference with some regionality to it, which is an interesting mix, but I'm really excited about the future of the Big 12, and your former institution, Memphis, is kind of on the fringe of this expansion. Poor Memphis can't quite get over the hump with inclusion, but boy, they're flirting with it, and I think Laird's taking them closer and fixing the Liberty Bowl. It's just a huge step in that.
Yeah.
Are they ever going to get over that hump?
I'm glad you brought that up. So when I was in Memphis nearly 13 years, believe it or not, 12 and a half. And long story short, I was looking for a place after UCF, and UCF just wasn't a fit for us and want to get closer to quote unquote home. My brother lives in Arkansas, so Memphis was close. Other than that, I didn't know anything about Memphis. And at first Rebecca said, we're not moving to Memphis. She may have said it a little differently, but I thought, hey, I'm going to be there 2 or 3 years, right? Maybe 3, 4, get my doctorate, move on. And we fell in love with the people, the institution. It's got some issues and whatnot, but it is just a tremendous city, great people. But the thing that held it back, and I'll just be very candid, leadership at the time. If they would have done what we started to do when I arrived in 2010, 10 years prior, like Louisville did, because you look at in early 2000s, Louisville and Memphis, same institutions, nearly identical. And Louisville started to invest, and, you know, Memphis was just a little late to the game. But what I've been very proud of what Memphis has been able to do, and while I was there, and build brand new practice facilities for football and men's basketball, all privately funded, because there wasn't any, you know, it's practice facility, so it's philanthropy. And, you know, the basketball facility, for instance, 21, you know, almost $22 million, one of the best in the country. And working with Penny Hardaway and overseeing men's basketball, you know, they've got a storied tradition. But football, people don't, you know, don't realize it's really, really strong. They have the longest bowl streak in the country, you know, nearly 10 years of any group of five. You know, and then we were able to secure $350 million in state funding in April before I left, and with the president and the mayor and Laird. And so that's going to go into invest in the FedEx Forum, which is a top notch NBA basketball facility, which Memphis plays in, and then the Liberty Bowl, which many K-Staters have been. And we all know it needs upgrades. Yep. So it's going to get it, and it's already been approved. It's happening. So, you know, a lot of schools are like, hey, this is our vision. This is what's going on. The neat thing, Memphis, they already have the money. It's already been funded. So they're going to plan to start in January. So once they get those two things in place, I really believe, especially geographically, it's a great fit with SEC. You get some of that territory. But the common misnomer, when I came to Memphis, I was like, oh, there's going to be tons of Tennessee and Ole Miss and Arkansas. Unbelievable. That city is nearly 100% Memphis. And what's unique there is they drink the Kool-Aid. So I told Laird, I said, you know, usually you'd go to institutions like these and you got to sell the community on how important the university is to the city. The supporters are telling you. And so that's the neat thing is people don't realize Houston. Yeah, Houston's a great school, great, you know, TV market, quote unquote. But it doesn't permeate like Memphis does. So Houston may be page 8 in the sports section. Memphis is front page on the, you know, the newspaper. And so that's the difference in Memphis and other institutions. Like, well, they're not quite the size, but the passion and just the overall city. But you're right. They haven't quite got there. And they've just been so close. And so the fans are so used to being just disappointed. So, you know, I've got a degree there. So hopefully for my friend's sake and people there, they can get in, because I really think they'd be a great fit. And Memphis fans would love to be in Big 12. And I know Big 12 would really enjoy their fan base for sure. So
yeah, I'm intrigued. We'll by see. It. I mean, it is a good regional fit too. It kind of bridges the east and the central parts of this conference. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we're going to end up with UConn for other reasons. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see how many Pac-12 teams end up. Who knows, by the time this actually releases, it might all be done, because this doesn't go out till Wednesday. So
Who knows?
We're getting close to hyperspeed with this, as everyone's been delaying. But as someone who's studied so intently the tie between your campus and your athletics, this has to fascinate you at a different level, seeing all this movement.
Oh, absolutely. And what this, especially the schools that are going from the American, you know, and BYU and Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, what it's going to do for those institutions. I mean, and we talked about it at Memphis, is it would absolutely set the university and athletic department on fire. Completely different trajectory. So something like this, and I think, you know, K-Staters and others take it for granted, but to be in the Big 12, you know, it's a great conference. And so I know those institutions are really excited, but what that's going to do for those schools is just tremendous. And you're starting to see it in ticket sales and even enrollment and whatnot, but it's going to be tremendous for the schools, and it's going to strengthen the conference, bring a new energy in.
Yeah, you know, I also think USF, if they would get serious about stuff, they could be in the conversation. But their rival has done it the right way. Just mimic what your rival did. It just cracks me up how institutions don't catch a clue here. What's going on?
You know what's interesting there, just real quick? When UCF was starting out with their football program, because people may not realize, they weren't Division I until the mid-90s.
Yeah.
You know, they were FCS, you know, at the time, too, you know. But they actually used USF, and USF came over and helped them start the program. And that's what's incredible is, and now it's kind of flipped the script and they've kind of taken off and South Florida has been left behind, if you will. So yeah. It's kind of interesting dynamic there.
In my long journey here with doing what I do, I sat in the trailer with Jim Leavitt at USF and he was starting the program and they didn't own a football. For a football program.
That's that wild.
Yeah. And I mean, it was literally ground up out of a trailer. We're building it, but you know, like UCF has a huge enrollment. These are major institutions that have had the commuter campus tag on them, which isn't always fair or accurate. But it seems like both of them are becoming more, I don't know, community based. They're trying to steer into that at least. But yeah, that's kind of a demeaning, you know, they hang it on Cincinnati and other places. And I'm like, just because they're in a metro area doesn't mean they're a commuter school. It's not fair at all. But I'll eagerly await to see what comes out of all this because it's something else. And again, I think some Pac-12 presidents and chancellors are about to find out just how important college athletics and being a member of a major conference is. They've taken it for granted. And it's when they lose that status, it'll be kind of the reverse of what you did your thesis on. It's going to be what happens to the university when you step back and start having less revenue in athletics.
It really could, especially, you know, you think of those institutions, Oregon State, Washington State, for instance, that's really could be the case, you know, in those instances. So Cal and Stanford, I think, are a little different beasts in terms of, you know, they may not lean as heavy, obviously, in athletics, but, you know, Oregon State and Washington State, those are institutions I know that are worried right now, for sure.
Yeah. And I feel bad for them. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
Kansas State and Iowa State were staring down that same gun. You know, you're going to get left out. You're not desirable enough. You're too rural. All the same stuff. And then the layer of geography gets them, too. It's just great fan bases. And in the case of Oregon State, a great athletic department, you know, top to bottom. Yep. They compete in a lot of sports. But
absolutely.
It's just the reality and an unfortunate circumstance. But I'm excited to see where all this goes. And I'm just so happy it's not the Big 12 being the hunted, the one that's going to be left out because, as you know, brother, it was that way.
Yeah.
So how is that troublemaking wife of yours, you know, that the world's sweetest person, but also I think we all agree that she's got a little troublemaking in her.
Yeah. You know, she's tremendous. I mean, she's honestly my best asset. And people are going to get to meet her, but she's so energetic and engaging, got a passion for K-State. So we're just really excited to be back. And she's just terrific. So looking forward to getting together with you. And Addison has not stopped wearing purple ever since it was announced. And it was kind of joking, you know, you don't have to wear purple every day. And she's like, oh, yeah, I do. It's like, okay, that's great. That's so, yeah, so, I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah.
Real funny. So obviously Memphis blue. And, you know, an interview said, well, what's going to be the most challenging thing? So I got to get rid of all the blue, you know, and that's pretty obvious. When I was at Memphis leaving, I said, hey, you know, I got a bunch of blue. I'm not, you know, I'm obviously not going to be wearing it in Manhattan. They're like, why? They're like, you can wear it on the weekends or you can wear blue. And I said, you don't understand. And I told that to my staff on Monday. I said, you know, at Memphis, I was leaving and I, you know, trying to give away my blue and they just didn't understand. And they just thought, oh yeah, you can wear that. I mean, just wear it on the weekends or, you know, it doesn't have Memphis on, it's just blue. And there's an audible gasp from the staff. They're like, oh, you know, like, of course, yeah. Why would you wear blue? Right. But that's just the pride of K-State. You got to love it. So
yeah,
the passion.
Here's a dirty secret about your friend that blue's my favorite color.
Oh no.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. My dad was born in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And blue's my favorite color. I got a lot going against me, but I've overcome.
It's a good color. You always just don't put red with it unless you mix it directly, then it ends up purple. So.
I know. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
people are going to love your wife. I mean, she's just an amazing person, and she's just fun to be around because of her positive energy she puts out. It's incredible. But
don't be surprised if she's yelling and screaming at games. So that's just, she's a passionate fan. So that's great.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fine. Let's keep her in one of those suites, though. Let's not unleash her on the public.
Love it.
Well, welcome back, everywhere. Brother. It's
Thank
pretty
you,
damn cool. It's really cool to have you back, and
appreciate it.
Look forward to getting together with the wife and kids, and Are they here right now?
They are. Yep, they're here. Yep,
you're all packed in a hotel room?
All packed in a hotel room. Yep, you can pray for us, you know. Wife, two girls, a dog, a bunny rabbit, and a turtle. How about that?
Oh, my God.
We're making it work. Although, yeah, I've been getting out of the office. So I'm heading to Houston next week, so that's probably good. One fewer person in the hotel room. But, yeah, we're looking for a spot. We want to make sure it's the right spot, so hopefully we can find a place and move there.
The house across the street just sold. You want me to go, like, tell them they got to move?
There you go. Maybe. Just move in your basement.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you'll be right next to my studio. So you hear this through the wall every day. That'd be kind of
cool. There you go.
Love it. Yeah. I feel like I can run across here. It's a beautiful house with a pool. It's perfect for you guys. And just say, look, you guys seem like nice people, but you're out. You can't. We voted you out.
So, buddy, I love it. Well,
get back to work, you lazy bum. It's a Sunday.
I will.
You need to be doing something with yourself since you're still in your first week of work.
That's right. Actually, I'm going to meet with Dr. Trace and do Live at 5 here in a little bit. So awesome. That's great. Reconnect with him. He's another, talk about tremendous case later. But we're just so honored and humbled and excited and to build on Amy's legacy and be here and do what we can to make K-State the best. So appreciate you having me on and looking forward to catching up. And we'll see you soon. And go Cats.
Okay, Doc. Thank you. Love you, brother.
All right. Love you. Take care.
So I hadn't texted with Adam in a very long time. I didn't bug him with a bunch of stuff during his climb through athletic administration. So I reached out to him and said, hey, buddy, you want to be on this? And we just started back up like it was 20 years ago. And I promised him I'd ask him a question during the course of this podcast. And I have to admit, I failed you, the listeners, myself, and let him off the hook. I needed him to admit that Memphis barbecue sucks. And we didn't get that done. This entire podcast, it's been a farce. But I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed getting to know Doc Walker. I'm just going to call him Adam, because he's a great dude. And I know so many of you will get to know him through the years. Well, that's it for this episode. We're coming down the home stretch. We're into August. I'm getting ready to go on vacation. We're going to cram some more in before football season. And remember, guys, go get your PSA scored. It is the best way for an early indication of prostate health issues. Take care, everyone. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.